I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Ivor Davis with us. Ivor, when you met Elvis, did you like him? Did he have that explosive chemistry?
Well, before I answer that question, George, I can tell you, you've made my year because I can't wait to see George Norrie sings Elvis Presley on October the 8th. Anyway, you know, the interesting thing is when I first met Elvis on a film set, it was before, well, actually it was after I went with him to meet the Beatles. And he was charming. He was a gentleman. He kept calling me sir, although I was 2 or 3 years younger than him. And I felt he was an interesting guy. He did not appear explosive. He was in the middle of shooting. And the funny story that I happened was that after we chatted for 15 minutes and he was talking about his leading lady called Donna Douglas and how they got along so well because they actually read the Bible together during lunch breaks, he, after 15 minutes of general chit-chat, nothing of great importance, somebody came in and said, "Al, they need you on the film set." So I said, "Well, maybe I could come and watch Elvis shoot the film." And the guy said, who was one of his Memphis mafias, "Oh, Elvis doesn't really like, you know, people coming in. It's a closed set." So I said, "Goodbye, Elvis. A pleasure to meet you." And off I went. And as I left the studio at Paramount, I heard a shouting, noisy group of guys playing football in the parking lot. And there was Elvis throwing the football around among his Memphis Mafia buddies. So that was my second encounter with Elvis, which I'd be very happy to tell you about my first encounter with Elvis, as I was the fly on the wall when the Beatles went along to see him in 1965. It was August 65.
They really wanted to meet him, didn't they?
They wanted to meet him. But in retrospect, and when you know, the moment you just absorb it when it happens, what happened was John was a great fan of Elvis, and I believe in retrospect that it was Colonel Tom Parker who decided that this would be a great idea to put Elvis together with the Beatles in Elvis's house. So in 1964, they never quite made it. The Beatles were on tour, crisscrossing the country. Elvis was making another movie. And then in 1965, Elvis and Brian Epstein, the Beatles' manager, got together at the Beverly Hills Hotel, said, "Let's make it happen." Now, the problem was for Colonel Parker, in a way, that Brian said later on, "We don't want any press there. We don't want to make this an extravaganza. So no press, no tape recorders, no photographers." I mean, can you believe? No photographers. Jeez. For the historic meeting. And when they finally met, it took a long time for them to kind of gel. And then, again, in retrospect, I didn't know at the time, but Elvis was jealous of the Beatles. First of all, they'd knocked him off the perch as a number one hit parade guy. And then number two, well, Elvis had not appeared live anywhere. And then 4 days before they met at Elvis's house, the Beatles appeared at Shea Stadium in New York and played to an ecstatic crowd of 55,000 people.
Sold out crowd.
And Elvis had seen this. And so, you know, there was a certain resentment. Elvis had been in the army, he'd come out, he was struggling, he was mm-hmm. making these movies, which were kind of copycat movies with different songs, mainly to sell the songs. So he wasn't too warm towards them. He wasn't bending over backwards to meet them. And for the first 10 minutes, it was a very awkward situation. I saw Elvis fiddling with the remote control. The Beatles sat around, and nobody introduced them. It's amazing to think of it. Nobody introduced the Beatles to Elvis. Finally, Elvis, in the silence of listening, what the sides of a jukebox was going, the television was playing, he jumped up and said, "Hey, you guys, I'm going to bed unless you came here to jam." And of course, that broke the ice, and they got on a bit better after that. And then they said they would meet each other again, but they never did. And then, if you want to flash forward, and what aggravated the Beatles about Elvis was that several years later, Elvis went to the White House to meet Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And Elvis decided that he was going to get Nixon young voters. So he persuaded the Nixon White House to let him meet Richard Nixon. And I saw the letter that Elvis wrote, and it was kind of a rambling letter because Elvis was high when he flew in from Palm Springs to Washington, D.C., Anyway, the Nixon White House said, "Come along, Elvis." Elvis showed up, and I think people have seen that picture. Elvis presented Richard Nixon with a sort of an antique gun, and Richard Nixon gave Elvis his federal agent's drug enforcement badge.
That's right.
It's kind of ironic, really, because Elvis wanted that, I suppose, because he ever got picked up riding along in the streets of wherever, and he could flash his federal badge at the police, and they would wave him on his way. So that was it. And one other thing, if I may add, George, at the time that Elvis met Nixon, he said to Nixon, "The Beatles are terrible guys. They earn all this money in America. They go back to England and they badmouth America." Well, that honestly was never the case. So by that time, the Beatles were totally unhappy with Elvis, and Elvis went on to you-know-what until the tragic end.
Absolutely. Now, he was 33 years old, Ivor, when he came back from his comeback in 1968.
Yes. Are you talking about, George, when he came back from the military or when he did his comeback concert in 1968?
68.
Okay. Well, that's another interesting story, which I'm sure you know about, because it's featured very heavily in the movie by Baz Luhrmann. But the other day, I had a long conversation with a guy called Steve Binder. And Steve Binder was the director of the Elvis comeback concert. And he said to me, that Elvis was very nervous about doing a live comeback concert.
He was,
He'd been away for so long. Go ahead, George. You were going to
You're right. He was very nervous when he came back. And he even told the crowd, and once again, they all cheered him.
Yes, he did, and that was being so honest. But the interesting story I felt about the background to the story was, as Steve Binder told me, that Elvis had come to him and said, "Look, I've been away. What do you think of my career, Steve?" And Steve was a young producer-director who really didn't care what he said. He said, "Elvis, your career is in the toilet." And Elvis smiled and said, "Well, nobody's ever told me that. Thank you." And Binder said he kind of nursemaided him through the comeback special. And if anybody who's seen the comeback special and anybody who's seen the recreation of the comeback special on the Baz Luhrmann movie Elvis, will see Elvis was magnificent in his black leather outfit with a live audience. It was quite a sensational show, and it saved Elvis's life until, of course, he got back onto the drugs, and then, as you described him, he was forgetting his lyrics, and the slide downhill continued until the end.
During the 8 months before he died in 1977, his doctor had prescribed him 10,000 doses of sedatives methamphetamines and narcotics. 10,000, Ivor.
That is so, I mean, when you put it that way, George, it is stunning. It's criminal almost, isn't it? Because the doctor was his awful enabler. I mean, no human being could survive that.
No.
Surely.
Absolutely not. And that's so tragic at 42. He adored his mother, didn't he?
He adored his mother. His father in the movie, and I didn't know his father, Vernon, in the movie comes across as a bit of a hayseed. His mother comes across as somebody who was crazy about her son, of course, and he was crazy about her. And when she died, of course, he was shattered, not surprisingly. And, Vernon moved in with his wife and into Gracelands after they'd lived a fairly, a little poverty-stricken life, if you like. And Graceland, wow, that was quite a museum, isn't it?
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What got Elvis on the charts? He walks into Sam Phillips' record shop called Sun Records with producer Sam Phillips, and they wanted an African-American music to a wider audience, didn't they?
They did, and look, the interesting background story is that Elvis was influenced by Black American music, as were, believe it or not, in the early days, the Beatles. Paul McCartney always talks about what Elvis talks about, how he loved Long Tall Sally and Roll Over Beethoven, which were done by Black entertainers of the period. And Elvis...
He loved Chuck Berry, didn't he?
Oh, he loved Chuck Berry, of course, absolutely. And Chuck Berry is shown in the movie. Elvis loved that music. And when Colonel Parker saw Elvis, or heard Elvis for the first time, he thought he was a black singer. And then he discovered he wasn't. And the film, actually, of Elvis shows how you know, it's sort of a metamorphosis into Elvis the king, which is rather an intriguing element of the film, I felt, which I didn't know all that much about.
I knew Chuck Berry because he was from the St. Louis area, and I had a little company that produced video programs, and he came in one day stumbling around. Nobody knew who he was, and he was trying to get dubs of all these videotapes he had in his hand, and he just walked right in. He didn't even stop at the reception desk. And I had to go and get him because, you know, who's this guy? I turned around, and it's Chuck Berry. I said, Mr. Berry, what do you need? And he said, I want some dubs of these. And I said, well, we can't. They're movies, and we're not allowed to. And he went, oh, he took them and left.
Well, George, was Chuck Berry was he the star at that time? Or
oh, yeah, he, yeah, he yeah. was. He was big-time star. It was probably toward the last three-fourths of his career when I ran into him.
Yes. Well, that's an interesting story I'd never heard, you know, before, but certainly it goes to the roots of rock and roll, isn't it, in a way, the history of rock and roll.
Absolutely. This kid who played Elvis in this movie did a pretty good job.
Oh, Austin Butler is his name, and he's a kid from Orange County, California, and he apparently, as soon as he knew he was in line for Elvis, he buried himself for months and months in Elvis mania or Elvis everything. And it showed, because I think, you know, maybe you and I can talk next year when the Oscars come out, because I think Austin will get a nomination. Now, whether he wins or not, I don't know.
Right.
And I think even Tom Hanks as the Best Supporting Actor nomination. Again, I don't know whether he will win, but Hollywood and the Academy do like actors who dress up in outfits that makes them look totally different. And Tom Hanks certainly did that. Let me ask you something, if I may. I'm sorry, I know it's your show, but did you ever run into Colonel Tom Parker?
No, I never did. Did not know him. Did not run into him at all, but. Was he the one that truly made Elvis the superstar that he became?
Well,
I know. I mean, Elvis had the talent, obviously, but,
absolutely. I think it's an interesting question, and you can cut the nation in half or in quarters on this one. I think Tom Hanks, I saw, called Tom Parker a diabolical genius. But was he a con man? Yes, he was. Was he a carnival man? Yes, he was. But he did nurse Elvis through the early periods.
And he loved making money off of Elvis, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's no doubt whatsoever, because Parker was very much a money man. I mean, the story that Barbara Streisand told me when I went on The Star Is Born was that they wanted Elvis to play the rock star. And Elvis was dying to play the rock star, and he went along and spoke to John Peters, who was the producer, and Barbara Streisand, and they wanted him. But Colonel Parker said no. And I think the reason Colonel Parker said no to that was, number one, Barbara Streisand would have got star billing, and number two, Elvis would have been playing a washed-out, drunken rock star. And Parker didn't want to take any chances. He didn't want to let him do it, because some people might think that Elvis was like that.
Now, when Elvis was on the Ed Sullivan Show, is it a true story that were the technicians, the camera people, were told, do not shoot below the belt. We don't want to see him wiggling.
I think to some extent that was true. I mean, Ed Sullivan was pretty, in a strange way, was very straight-laced. And so I think maybe, I mean, he told the girls when the Beatles showed up not to scream. But so I think there's a certain element of truth to that. And don't forget, at the time, and I remember I was in England, people said Elvis the pelvis, I mean, he's lewd and lascivious, which is kind of ridiculous when you think of it. But so I would concur with what you just said, that Ed Sullivan said to the camera crew, you know, play careful. We have a middle American audience, and we don't want to offend them.
Well, I think when Sullivan had the Doors on and they were singing Light My Fire, there was that version that says, girl, we you know, couldn't get much higher or something. Whatever that was.
Yes.
He didn't want that phrase in there.
No, I think so. And, I don't know where you were, you know, how young you were at the time of the Ed Sullivan Show, but it was must watching every Sunday night. I think it was Sunday night. And millions, 74 million people tuned into the Beatles, and maybe the same amount or less for Elvis.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern. And go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.